Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to Fire Engineering Hump Day Hangout. I got all the cast of characters on here. We're missing a bunch of people, but we'll talk about them in a little bit in a bad way for not being on here. But, you know, once again, it's a first Wednesday of the month, and we get to do Hump Day Hangout with the International Society of Fire Service Instructors and Traditions Training. And we got a great crew on here today. I always got my man Larry Schultz on here, Chief Halden. And Brian is representing the International Society of Fire Service Instructors. And once again, please make that name a little shorter so we don't have to say that every time. But I'll get into the topic here in 1 minute. But, you know, at every Wednesday, the first of the month, we always want to get a update of stuff that's happening with fire engineering and FDIC. And we just got back and Bobby's got 6 months to go before we do it all over again. So how did things go with this abbreviated changing dates and moving around? How were the numbers? How did everything go?
Well, to say it was absolutely amazing would be an understatement. We had about 25,000 folks or so, give or take, at the event, which was just amazing. Hands-on training was unbelievably well done. It was just phenomenal. Workshops and classrooms, as always, you guys crushed it. Thank you all for being there and doing what you did. You know, if you have a chance, if you weren't able to be with us, please take a look at what Steve Chikorotis presented. He was just phenomenal, just absolutely phenomenal. John Alston did a beautiful job, just an amazingly inspiring job. And then the Conley brothers, who are great friends of all of us, Larry and David, they did an amazing job. And to be honest with you, serendipity played a huge role in there. We didn't choreograph or we don't tell anybody what to speak on. We just let people do what they're going to do. And we always advise our keynoters, please, you know, if you're going to appear in uniform or represent your job, make sure you clear it with your job, but you don't have to clear it with us. So what you hear from these men and women that we ask to speak is what they want to share. And so those presentations were just unbelievable. And then we had such incredible interaction. The fun run was phenomenal. It was the first fun run that I wasn't cold at. So, and I'm an old person, so we get cold easily. Anything below 85 degrees and us old guys are putting on our cardigans. So we had a great fun run. We had a wonderful stair climb. The NFFF, they always do an amazing job. If you're at FDIC, you know, please participate in the stair climb. And it's just a beautiful event. And the NFFF is just an amazing group of people who really are getting clearer and clearer about their mission every day. And it's just a blessing to be associated with those great folks. The Fools hit it out of the park. The Fools Bash was just insane. It was a wonderful time. It was just an amazing, amazing event. And we had all of those people. So far, we heard that three people out of the 25,000 since then have experienced the COVID experience. But so that's a transmission rate of 0000000000.00000000, something like that. So it was not, you know, that although a concern and absolutely a major concern, we didn't see it there. We must have been just that, either just ahead of something or just behind something, but we didn't see any problems with that. So in case people had concerns about that, we didn't have any problems at all. So incredibly important that we're aware of that and of that disease, but incredibly healthy crowd, because apparently it was just not an issue for the crowd that was there. And our heart breaks. We heard about another firefighter that died the other day from COVID in the Maryland area. So it's an incredibly fascinating disease, and you know, how to deal with it is truly a complicated issue for the fire service, a complicated issue for individuals, and we really ask people to get yourselves educated and consult with your doctor. Don't take advice from some politician or some lawyer or some, you know, TV pundit. Talk to your doc, for God's sakes. Trust me, I talk to doctors all the time, and they're good people. So talk to your doctor, for the love of God. So really cool stuff to talk about, especially with this group. It's now time to register for FDIC 2022. And a couple of guys, I don't know if you guys have heard of them. We got two guys who are going to be taking the stage, keynoting, a guy named Shaw and a guy named Mitchell, obscure characters. But you guys may have heard, you may have heard of them. The registration is going to open up in October. So if you want to hear Dan Shaw and Doug Mitchell give their 20 minutes of fame independently, they're going to do their thing. And also Frank Viscuso is going to be doing his thing. So really amazing opportunity to hear some of the brightest guys we know in the fire service sharing their insights and thoughts And so we always have three great, you know, speakers from the fire service every year. And so, you know, next year, those are the three great speakers you're going to get to hear. In 2023, we got a really interesting character who we're asking to do a talk at FDIC on the main program. And the name is hard to spell because the dude has two Z's in his name, and only a complete jackwagon would have two Z's in their name. And so Brian is going to be in 2023. He's going to be one of our keynoters, one of the three keynoters we're going to have in 2023. So the reason we do that is we ask all the keynoters to shadow the people in 2022. So you see what it's all about behind the scenes, working with the teleprompter people, all the production stuff that goes into it. So the lovely, Brian, are you still the spokesperson for the Hair Club for Men? Are you still?
Yes. I'm still a big member. It hasn't taken effect yet, but yes.
I'm the president. I'm just teasing. That's the old deal. So Brian will be in 2023. So just a huge shout out to the guys from Traditions Training. And if you're not aware of Traditions Training, I'll give a quick plug for them because I know they won't. The Instructor Society, everybody listening to this knows who they are. Please, if you're not a member, please be a member. The Instructor Society, which is what I call them, Ricky, because it's a lot easier than the 32-word official name. So just the Instructor Society. It's a great group of guys and gals that will help you become a better instructor. And they're wonderful people, and they do a lot of great stuff year round. So please consider, I think it's like $25 or $30 to be a member, right, Brian?
It's around $100. It's a little bit more, but it's but you know, we're trying to make it value added. So yeah, there's a lot of opportunities there. We're gonna do some stuff this afternoon, and
damn inflation.
Hour and some.
But
some
you get a discount to FDIC that covers the cost of that.
Yes, sir. Yep. Yeah. So,
you know, the discount you get at FDIC pays for your membership. So,
yes, sir.
So well worth doing. And then Traditions Training, if you're looking for good training in your organization, whether it's command, whether it's strategy and tactics, whether it's, you know, interpersonal relations, whatever it is, health and wellness, seriously, the guys at Traditions Training can, if they don't do it themselves, they'll point you in the right direction. So with that, that's what we got going on. October is when it all opens up. We know just from looking at what's going on, the trends across the country on shows that are happening and the crowds that are showing up, that if you do not register early, please do not call me in September saying downtown sold out, or November rather. Don't call me in November saying, Bobby, I can't get a room downtown, because I'm anticipating 40,000 people. And just from the reaction of the crowd that we just had, there's everybody who was at the August show is coming. And so, you know, we're starting off with 25,000. And so you can anticipate standing room only everywhere. And Indy is back in business. So get ready. It's going to be epic. And look forward to seeing y'all there.
Great. I don't know about that Dan and Doug guy, but
right?
Is that taking place at the Thursday night comedy show? Is that what you're not having a Thursday night comedy show? You're just having these two?
Well, one of them will be the Wednesday comedy show. One will be the Thursday comedy show. Yeah.
All right. So, so when we're kind of talking about getting all this all together and working on this, is that we talked a lot and we had a pretty good show about 2 months ago about outside in fires. And I think we got a lot of good feedback from that. I think Bobby got a lot of traction with that in social media. And so when I was looking at it today, we just recently had a 4-alarm fire in Baltimore, Maryland, and that I got some video from that kind of highlights it. It isn't an actual outside in fire, but it leads into what I kind of want to talk about today, would be engine company operations and then how we train people to do engine company operations. So before I show the video, is that obviously, you know, here recently, we're talking about the month of August, you know, we're just getting to September, is that in the Washington, Baltimore area, we just recently had a firefighter line of duty death on August 11th, Battalion Chief Joshua Laird died in a rather large house fire, very eerily similar to Harrah County, Maryland. Obviously, all that investigation is going on. into that fire. You know, we're a couple months out from that, you know, getting that report back out. But obviously, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with the Frederick County, Maryland Fire Department and, you know, the Laird family for that. So just once again, kind of hit close to home. All of us know people in that department and, you know, pray for them. So, but when we talk about this engine company stuff, because how crucial it is, I'm going to share this video and then we'll kind of set it up here. So give me 1 second and I'll. So I got, that's a row of about 8 townhouses. The fire starts in a bump out. So, if, you know, Larry, obviously you have much more experience with bump outs than I do. So all this is, there's a room that's extended off the back of the row of this, and that catches on fire. And then, you know, gets well involved, probably got fire coming out of probably about 3 or 4 windows on the rear, usually how those decks or bump outs run. And then it extends down the row. So it's kind of an outside /in/in fire, I guess. I don't know if I can put a term with it, but obviously, you know, we have a, you know, the, as you can see from the video, the original fire building is the building on your left, the red one on the end. That's the original fire building and extends down the entire row. So when I was kind of watching this video, I was more, you know, there's obviously everybody can say, oh, look, ground ladders. Oh, look, we can go cut a hole in the roof. I was more looking at how many hose lines am I going to need at this fire? How many engine companies am I going to need? And then how quickly can they deploy the line? And then obviously not retreat's a bad word, but, you know, remove themselves from that building and move on to the next building. Because there, I would say there's probably no fire department today, even including this big city fire department that this fire was at, that can deploy, you know. So we got 8 townhouses, there's fire on every floor in the rear, you know, so that's, you know, almost 20 hose lines that you probably need, one for each floor and then one to go to the back, and just how you're going to be deploy those. And once again, it lies on the backs of the engine company to get that stuff done. So that's kind of what I wanted to kind of hit on today. I mean, even it's a, you know, great fire. You can see they have fire on all different floors, hose lines going in some, hose lines not going into some. But, you know, I listened to this fire, Chief Schultz listened to the fire, and just the, you know, them trying to get ahead of it. And obviously we have 2 instructors that were actually working that day on the particular, but they're working today. And guess what? They're on a fire. So they couldn't be on to kind of talk about it. But this is in Baltimore City where Engine 8 and Truck 10 are due at this particular box. So I'll give you my thoughts. And then obviously I know Larry will be able to chime right in and Brian will be able to chime right in. Is that how important, you know, the engine company is and how important our, you know, Bill Gustin and his crew did a whole, you know, hump day hangout on water supply and everything. And obviously me, Larry and Brian all probably have different views on water supply. You know, mine is, you know, lay it on the way in and then, you know, we'll worry about, you know, getting hose lines in place and then we'll get to supply line charge. So we're not here to discuss that. I mean, mine is just the sheer amount of practice that has to go in to being good. And being good is what's going to put this fire out. So they saved this block. I mean, obviously burned out a few rooms, but it's not like at the end of the day, you know, all 8 townhouses collapsed in because of this fire. And that all comes from good engine company work. And it's a good interior engine company work. Now, obviously they had to flow some master streams. I mean, the back of this place is just rolling. But you know, these are all, you know, 1.5, 1.75 attack lines going in here, and their deployment is pretty flawless. I mean, Baltimore City is a very well known for their engine company work and the dedication they put into that. But what I try to harp on is the practice that has to come into that every day. So, you know, they run fire. So I, you know, my organization, Larry's organization, obviously Brian will comment on his organization, is that, you know, we go to these, you know, odors of smoke. We go to these sparking outlets, you know, smoke on the third floor, you know, not even good information like, hey, there, you know, there's fire coming out of the windows, or it's next to across from at the intersection where, you know, hey, we're probably going to have a good fire. We need to be prepared to go to work. And at these particular incidents where we're talking about like the odor of smoke, you know, smoke on a second floor, sparking outlets and stuff like that, is that our companies that Larry and I are in our organizations, you know, are constantly taking proactive approaches to stretching these lines. And that's kind of like the way, in my eyes, and obviously, you know, Brian and Chief Halton can have a different opinion, because, you know, we're, you know, the fire service is just huge in this country. And in the words of my friend, Bill Carey, you know, you do you, you know, so I'm not going to tell you that which, you know, what Baltimore City and what I do in my organization is going to fit your organization. But I can tell you, practicing stretching attack lines at real incidents where cars are at, where fences are at, where street signs are at, you know, where sidewalks are and are not. And doing that for these odorous smokes and sparking outlets is only going to make you better when we pull up to the fire where we got fire blowing out of two or three floors or two or three townhouses, and we have to deploy the line quickly. You know, and everybody can have a comment about it. Look, I watch all the water mapping. I watch all this great information that's coming to us. And I said it in my class, you know, at FDIC that day. I said, look, I just want you to put water on it. I don't care which way you turn the nozzle. I don't care if you go right, left, up, down, crossways, just put water on it. Cause I think if anything, we've shown that putting water on it makes it everything a whole lot better. You know, it cools that smoke, it cools the gases, you know, so we can make that pushback. But that all comes from great practice. And I'll comment on it later on. But Brian, I'm going to go to you, because, you know, we'll go to Larry. But just, you know, we're talking about, like, you know, the training that you guys do and how you make that realistic. And
so, absolutely. So, you know, I picked up a couple of key points that I think are critical points in today's fire service that don't always get hit. One, you said listening to the fire, right? And if you go in a lot of firehouses, and I'll speak for my area, it is literally like almost silent. The days of the scanners and the radios and things like that being on, I'll just speak on it. You know, it's down. It's literally don't disturb me unless my truck specifically is getting a call. And, you know, growing up in the firehouses, that wasn't the case. And trying to change some of those things and change those mentalities so that you're hearing other companies at work and picking up on what's going on. And that's only going to build you for a better production on their next call. I totally agree too. And the fact that when you look at that fire that you guys showed, you know, that's a short stretch into those buildings from the street. So having the hose packages set up, training for those incidents and things like that, we don't have a tremendous amount of those townhouse style homes. Most of our stuff, single family residents, which is a problem out of itself. And we do have the inside, the outside in fire, if you will, where it starts on the back deck from a barbecue pit or something of that nature. Traditionally what we'll do is we'll, you know, hit it to the seat of the fire and then bring our stuff in. You know, when you look at that fire, I think the key points are, you know, you're going to take a, you know, for us, we run 2-3-person crews. So a firefighter and officer working, you know, it might take 2 crews to make it to that third floor where that fire's at. So, you know, practicing in realistic situations, you know, one of the things we always get digged on in training is, you know, putting 6 people on a hose line just to get the evolution done. And, you know, in a training evolution, you got to do a training evolution just like you'd have it. And if you got 1 or 2 guys on the line, you got 1 or 2 guys on the line. If you have the luxury of having 4 and 5 person engine companies, well, then that's how you train. So, but I think making the training as realistic as possible and putting to your point, I think using the calls as training opportunities is a great example of real world training, only makes it better.
I'm sorry, I'm back. I'm here. somebody was knocking at my door. I apologize. So I mean, you bring up a point that I just wanted to say, you know, yeah, this is a short stretch. It's a short stretch for the first company,
you know, absolutely.
You know, I know, you know that, but I said, like, the second, third, fourth, the fifth engines, you know, now, hey, you know, we got all our short stretch hose lines on here and, you know, we can't use those. Now we got to go to a longer stretch hose line. How well practiced are you in that? And, you know, let's say they're using a 150 or a 200. Here's it. All right. Now my 4th, 5th, or 6th new engines that are coming in are making these longer stretches, you know, is your engine company set up for that? Are your nozzles set up for that? Can you make these long stretches? And just like you said, and, you know, a very good point is that, you know, if you're operating with a 2 or 3 person engine company, that's how you have to train the training ground. You can't, like you said, you can't go, all right, we're going to put this line in service. 6 of us are going to do it, because that's just going to set you up for failure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No, and in the extended stretch too is a great practice training too, because like you say, you know, it even goes back to the additional companies coming in. Are you looking for different ways to come into that scene and truck placements, everybody stacking themselves and all those things, they all come into play on it. But I totally agree. If you're not thinking, you know, as a 3rd, 4th company in, if you got, you know, a working fire and you're going to act as, you know, you're coming in as an engine and you're going to have to stretch a line, you know, thinking beyond that pre-connected 150 or 200 foot cross lay, how are you going to get your water up to there?
Chief Schultz.
No, I think you guys touched on all the good things. Again, the the point I would quantify, and I don't want to. I think we're going to talk philosophically about the either outside in fires or fires and structures with attached similar type structures, as opposed to the Baltimore City fire itself, because yeah, I listened to it on the radio, but certainly wasn't there to see it. But aside from that, you know, all the points you brought up are really good. I would just add to that, that we oftentimes focus on the speed of the stretch as opposed to the efficacy of the stretch. And that's the key point, right? You can stretch it as quick as you want. If you're not chasing kinks, if you're not managing pinch points, if your driver can't get your water in a reasonable fashion, add any of those things to the equation, and it's just a fast, empty stretch. So it really is about efficacy, which involves speed as a portion of that. But no question, I think over years, the art of the stretch has really gained a lot of popularity. I don't know when I came on the job that there was a lot of energy put behind the speed of the stretch and those type of things. Obviously we did that, but I think it's fair to say over the last, you know, 10, 12 years in the fire service, people that have understood the importance of the effective first line.
Yeah. And I just, you know, when we talk about that training and, you know, it's gone over the last decade or so, is that I think we've kind of moved. I know you and I, you know, anytime we can get an acquired structure, anytime we can do that in a real world environment, because, you know, I know what your training ground looks like. I know what my training ground looks like. I don't know what Brian's looks like, but guess what? There's, you know, it's a building around a beautifully paved parking lot. You know, so there's no obstacles there. And then that's how sometimes we test proficiency. And I was just as guilty of it as anybody, is that, you know, when we started proficiency testing, is that we would do it at our training grounds. And, you know, there's really not a whole lot there. To throw challenges, or to, like Larry said, chasing the kinks, you know, and it's not about, you know, not how quickly you get it to the door, you know, it's how efficiently you stretch it out, no kinks, you're able to advance it quickly. And, you know, so then, you know, I had a lieutenant at that particular time at training who, you know, asked for all this stuff. He asked to go to Home Depot and buy fencing. He asked to go buy parking stops. He asked the local junkyard for cars to park in front of the training burn building. So when we did the proficiency testing, we had some of those obstacles there to, once again, to challenge what's going to be happening to them in the field each and every time. But, you know, I can't sell it enough to say, hey, look, you know, that hose should not be staying on the fire truck when we pull up to our sparking outlets and odors of smoke. Now, I'm certainly not an advocate of, hey, let's go pull an attack line for a sparking outlet into some person's house that has, you know, beautiful carpet, you know, and we're going to do more damage. But you can at least get it from the fire truck to the front door, you know, get it all stretched out, you know, however you do that with a AAA or Minuteman, with whatever, you know, your department uses, as long as you can do it proficiently. So, you know, that practice piece has got to come in. So Chief Bobby, you're awfully silent. This is, you know, this didn't like you very all, you know.
When I'm around smart people, I listen.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
So seriously, Brian, you, Larry, or some of the, and Scott's on with us too. Just folks, you know, Scott Kleinschmitz has joined us, and I'd love to hear what he thinks. I hate to impose, Ricky, but I would love to see just the screen snap or the video again, so everybody knows.
Sure.
Kind of the orientation that we have here.
Sure, boss. Right on it.
I don't know if we can talk over it. So if we keep talking, how's the audio, Pete? Were you okay with audio? You're hearing audio okay? So this is a fantastic piece of video. And Ricky told us that it came from the Ring doorbells. And Larry, if I'm understanding Ricky correctly, it was a bump out on the rear of the red building at the far side. Is that correct? Or was it a bump out in the middle, Ricky?
Bump outs on the red side, on the red one on the left-hand side there, left of our screen.
All the way at the end or in the middle?
All the way at the end.
So, I mean, we can talk about stretches, obviously incredible job, Baltimore City, world-class fire department, world-class people, always have been, always will be. I mean, they were, you know, really christened in fire, and they've been just iconic in their ability to adapt, adjust, and overcome throughout the years. I mean, the great Baltimore Fire, for the love of goodness, you know, it's a history lesson in of itself. But as you look at that photo, and any idea when that was built, Ricky?
No, but they've certainly been refurbished. So, you know, that's not a typical, you know, they've definitely been refurbished.
So you take the bump outs on the first floor and look at where the fire is in just this video, right? And we talk about trying to figure out where the seat of the fire is, fire spread, you know, stretching to try to get ahead of the fire. That's an amazing job that they have going on there in terms of anticipating fire growth and fire extension. But look at the amount of water too. In other words, we're doing a lot of stuff, and to echo a bit of what Chief Schultz said, you know, fast is great, but fast and smart and effective is really what you're looking for, right? If you're quick, that's great, but if you're not accurate, that's bad, right? Alexander Hamilton might have drawn first, you know, he might have taken the first shot, but he missed, you know, and the rest is history. So, you know, you've got to be fast and accurate. And so we're looking at what they're doing there. That's a massive problem. And, you know, if you had rolled up, you know, and I don't know, you know, if the video was 15 minutes earlier or 10 minutes earlier in that firefight, where the fire was then might be a radically different picture of what we're seeing now. So when we're talking about advancing hand lines, we're all over the place on this now. And I think that's a good thing. And I don't think there's any hard, fast rules for anybody. Certainly if the first new engine company in Baltimore City had chosen to go on tank water, no one would have been throwing stones at them if that company officer's assessment thought he could get ahead of it. And then conversely, if they decided to lay in, I don't think anybody's conversation would have a problem with that. As to, you know, different loads and such, kudos to people like, well, Ray McCormick, who was doing hose load classes 15 years ago, 10 years ago at FDIC. Kudos to people like Steve Robertson, Stretching for Success. And the whole class is just about stretches. You just stretch for 4 hours. And I don't think that's nearly enough. I think you look at the complexity of stretching hose efficiently, as Larry pointed out, is far more nuanced than people want to give us credit for, right? And developing the ability to do that and foresee the problems, even just, you know, pinch points on stairwells, pinch points in hallways, you know, just the elevation issues alone. And then when you talk about the, you know, the role of the engineer and having a, you know, maybe a company assigned to water supply in that particular case, you've got potentially 12, 15 hand lines operating. That's a lot of, you're moving a lot of water to a lot of different locations, you know, and doing it effectively is really a mammoth undertaking. And so it's a fascinating piece of video. I just love the fact that Baltimore was so kind to share that with us. And it really tells you how quickly a fire can spread and where, you know, an occupant, if I was the occupant on the far left, to my left on the screen, or the far right rather on the screen, as I'm looking at it on my computer monitor here, I might think I got nothing to worry about. Oh no, you got plenty to worry about, you know, because the chases that are built into the buildings in modern day construction and in our legacy construction are massive, and people don't understand that. You know, you look at a nice drywalled in apartment, if you can get behind it and take that, if we could do an X-ray of that building and just see where the fire was going, right, and following all those pathways, would be an amazing, amazing thing to see, right? And how much flammable material is inside of those chases is also an amazing thing to see and undertake. So I think that stretching and having stretches placed prescriptively, in other words, ahead of the fire, that there's a whole other art form, right? It's almost like the fire writ team. Like you're the crew that's being assigned to the building on the far right that doesn't really have any fire showing in it at all right now might be just as important as the people who've got, you know, fire blowing out the windows in terms of controlling that and saving property and protecting lives and all the rest of it. Obviously, you want to evacuate before any fire got there, but even doing an evacuation, getting ahead of getting all those folks out, that's an amazing piece of video. We were commenting before we went live as to the fire almost looks like it's simulated, but that's real fire. And that's going to take a lot of water to knock down. I mean, like a skin fire, and there was another skin fire just recently, I'm trying to think of where it was. There was a building that had a skin fire, a cladding fire.
Italy.
Was it Italy?
I think so. I think it was in Italy. That 20-story high-rise or something?
20-story high-rise, yeah, cladding fire. So, you know, if you've got an exterior fire on a structure and it's the cladding or it's this, you know, it's just the shingles or what on the outside, your flow rates there can be much lower. When you've got fire inside, like we're seeing here, that's a contents and structure fire that you're dealing with. Those contents are producing a lot of energy, and that's what's articulating into the structure and pushing that fire further throughout that structure. That's a lot of water you got to be delivering. So those men and women on those lines, they're probably operating with those lines open. You know, they're as best they can consistently. So I think that stretching for success, Jeff Shoup's engine company class, you know, the traditions training class on handline, you know, movement, get anybody you can into your organization. The reason I like to push all of these groups that are out there training, even Sam Hiddle Hard from the Yard, training company. I'm just teasing. We're making fun of our good friend Sam Hiddle. Irrespective of who you have, I don't care if it's Aaron Heller or friends from Traditions Training or Jason Hubelman's company. Forgetting the name of it. It doesn't matter. If you can get some outside guys to come to your location, you know, it's the old adage out of the Bible. You know, a prophet is never a prophet in his own hometown, right? So, you know, Jesus said that. Jesus showed up and everybody said, hey, you're from here. You don't know what you're talking about. And that didn't work out well for them. But so it's the same thing with us, right? It's always nice. And it's also nice to hear a variety of voices. Like you bring in Steve Robertson and his guys, then bring in, you know, the traditions guys, then bring in Jason and his troops. And everybody's going to give you that little nuance, you know, or you're going to hear something a little bit differently, or maybe their accent, you know, because they've got a Southern accent, you think they're smart, or, you know, they got an East Coast accent, so you think they're experienced. Whatever it is that resonates with you, good for you, good for them. But if you look at that video and you don't realize how complicated this gig is, you're just not paying attention. I mean, this is a complicated gig, and no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And you'll find few organizations that have their stuff wrapped as tightly as the Baltimore City folks do. And, you know, you probably have to go to a place like Chicago. You probably have to go to a place like, you know, Philly or you know, you got to go someplace where the people pay attention and those troops pay attention. So love that video, love the nuances in there. And, you know, we talk about the stretches, we got to talk about the evacuations, we got to talk about the searches, we got to talk about the construction features. And when we talk about outside in, if you're a student of this game, outside in fires, some of the worst fires we've ever had are outside in fires, whether it's Precious Faith Tabernacle, whether it's the Southwest Supermarket, whether it's the Sofa Superstore, all of them outside in fires. And they're fascinating fires because the building has ways to make that fire move. And when you can't see it moving, doesn't mean it's not moving. You know what I mean? Great, great piece of video. So train diligently, but I would say train, you know, I'll say one thing. I understand the whole acquired deal. I get it, but kudos to, you mentioned somebody earlier, Ricky, kudos to the training officer who said, you know what? We can bring in cars. We can bring in, you know, old furniture. We can bring in, you know, because getting an acquired structure these days, especially which as fast as property is moving, you know, you put for sale sign on a piece of property and you'll suddenly have 25 new best friends that want to buy your place, right? Property's moving quickly. But if you can take your existing facility, and change it up a little bit. Put in an obstruction, lock the door. You know, you can do all kinds of stuff. Make the first floor simulate the first floor as a basement. Say, oh no, the second floor, that's now the first floor. You know, create challenges. Doesn't mean just because it's what you have, doesn't mean you have to use it the way it is every time you use it. So that was some great discussion. And we haven't even gotten into, you know, pump pressures and friction loss and the type of hose you have and nozzle configurations and all that good stuff, but we can.
All right. So it's not Scott. It's not Wichita Scott. It's Scott Kraut.
Oh,
it's Scott Kraut. You with us, brother?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine, man. So
I didn't know there was a Wichita Scott.
There is a Wichita Scott.
Probably a Scott just about everywhere. But no, good stuff. I think, you know, you have to back it all the way up to, you know, Ricky, you mentioned it, and Chief Schultz and Chief Halton mentioned it. You know, the theory behind all this, and Chief Halton alluded to it, is, you know, we have to be fluent in our craft, and that is speed and accuracy. I know one thing that I've been working on is, you know, we've said this before on other podcasts or talking about any training, is, you know, it's nothing as effective or efficient, as Chief Schultz said, if it's, you know, if you got a line that's going somewhere where it shouldn't be. And so I'm trying not to focus on the outside in, but I don't think that's where you wanted to go. But to that point, you know, gas leaks, medical locals, those are all opportunities once the emergency is over, or for a gas leak, you know, to still stretch. And to Ricky's point, stretching the door is all you need, because you know what you're going to need inside the house. But I'll back it up even further to the chauffeur and say, you know, when we go medical locals, I'm like, hey, you know, house on fire, the hydrant's over here. And, you know, we do that because, you know, you run those streets over and over, and, you know, God knows you're never going to remember that, but you might remember that one weird hydrant, or hey, we can't reverse lay here because now the truck company can't get in, or once the truck gets in, that in the second company can't get past. And like Chief Schultz said, none of this matters, and your line is going to where it needs to go. So a lot of what we've been doing is, you know, my guys know that the shoulder load stays on the shoulder for 30 seconds while I at least get a lap in. I'm not as fast as I used to be, but, you know, if I can cut to the Charlie side or catch as many sides as I can driving in, you know, I'm going to probably, you know, especially with the garden department, you know, there's probably going to be an adaptation, or I'm going to call an audible at some point. So I don't want all that hose, you know, stretched out, like you said, fast, and we're at the door ready to go. And meanwhile, I'm going to change the play here in a second because, you know, it's a terrace level garden and I'd like to keep the stairwell clean. So we're going to go through the slider, you know, and now you've got all this hose on the ground and you're masking up, ready to go down the steps. And it's like, wait a minute. So I think part of that whole process is slowing the incident down. And that's that first engine officer's responsibility. You know, it's to not get all excited about, I got a plume in the sky and all this other stuff. Just let it roll, you know, and give direction to those companies that are coming in that, hey, look, you know, it might, you know, first an engine might even have to give up their fire, you know. And then the other piece of that is with my chauffeur, we practice, you know, he's on the second line. So if we're going to Charlie for that outside in fire, it's on the deck or the bump out. That's the initial line, and that water is flowing by the time I'm done with my lap. And now the chauffeur has got the line to the front door for the next engine. And you know what? If I made a mistake and Charlie's not that big of a deal, well, guess what? I have to give up the fire, and the second engine is going to have that line waiting for him at the front door. But that's a responsible thing to do. And you know, as Ricky said, you know, I didn't believe this until I was an engine company guy, but, you know, that the water on that fire makes all the difference in the world. You know, the search, nothing else can happen without a line. And you don't need too many line of duty deaths with a charge hose line of the accurate size and you know, the amount of water flowing that you need to flow. It typically doesn't happen. You're not dying in fires and you have, you know, for the most part, you have a charge line and it's in the right spot of the adequate length and flow. And so just one more thing to go back to those, we're starting to see those, you know, we had that large one on Richmond Highway, I guess it was March of 2020, something like that. And, you know, we're also getting this problem where we're using residential tactics on fires that aren't residential. They're bigger than that. They're commercial. They're large volume fires. And I think the art of stretching obviously is something that needs to be practiced and honed, but also the art of big water and not being afraid of that 2.5 line and being able to move with it or that big punch from your deck gun, you know, and then being able to shut down, move on to the hydrant, you know, leave room for the truck, telling that truck company, hey, look, we're going to hit this real quick, shut it down and reposition, you know, to get the most bang for your buck. So, you know, you got to look at those fires and as Ricky said, you know, whether it's sparks or gas leaks or, you know, in my case, even medical local, and go, what if, you know, what if, what's the tactic for this thing? And then as an engine company officer, you have to be able to train your people to operate autonomously while you're taking that lap. You know, can you make a difference? You know, and is it going to be a wet stretch or a dry stretch? What's going to be more effective? What's going to be faster? Do you flow the water into the window and then now run that charged hose line into the house, around the corners, up the stairs? Or do you give it a second and just stretch dry as long as you can and then fill her up, you know? So all good stuff.
All right, Scott, it certainly gives us a lot to think about. I got to go, you know, now that Scott mentioned some of that, I'm going to give you another picture for discussion. And this was a recent fire in the jurisdiction where it's a 3 in the front, 4 in the rear garden apartment building. And the fire starts on the bottom floor in the rear. So there's 4 floors. When they arrive, there's 4 floors of fire. And once again, we talk, like Scott said, is it where are we going to put that first line, how we're going to operate, and how we might have to give up that fire. So let me show you this picture real quick. And so can you guys see that picture?
Got it.
Okay. So this is this is the rear. So the fire starts on the very lowest floor extends up the exterior wooden balconies. And it makes for a very, very dramatic fire. Non-sprinklered. So, you know, fire extension is very likely inside of the living area. So, you know, you got to give a lot of credit to the First Due Engine Company at this particular fire. They chose to extinguish the fire from that rear side of the building using one of those mini monitors or blitz fires or whatever it is. They, you know, large volumes of water to knock down that fire. The piece that, you know, and I'll go to Larry when I get done and go to Brian, is that certainly, you know, just because of the way the department operates with staffing levels and the amount of units that are going to collapse on the scene in a certain time frame, you know, incident commanders and people are able to go, yeah, we can apply the water to the outside of the building, but at the same time, we're deploying, you know, attack lines in the front of the building and still doing our searches. So it's not like we said, hey, we're going to do an entirely exterior operation. And when we get done with our exterior operation, then we're going to go interior. So this is kind of worked in conjunction with each other, is that we're going to knock it down, this fire in the rear, because if we don't address that, things are going to get 1,000 times worse. But at the same time, we're addressing the lines inside and the searches that have to be done. This is 4 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, it's not like, unless you're working an overnight shift, you know, this may be when you're getting up, or, you know, you got a couple hours of sleep left. So the chances of having somebody trapped are pretty big. So, you know, this is just a combination of tactics that go in there. So,
Ricky, they had to stretch around the back and set up a portable monitor. That's how they did this?
No, they drove around, they laid out and drove around to the rear as they came in and then stretched a 3-inch line down this hill and then was able to use that blitz fire to get all the way from the terrace level all the way to the top.
So my eyes suck. So I guess there must be a parking lot below that. Like I see a sidewalk and is it paved down below that?
No, it's a grassy hill.
So
they park here by the police car.
Okay.
Stretch on. This is pre-arrival.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I didn't say that. So.
Okay.
But so, Larry?
Well, I, so are you?
I'm just commenting.
All right. Yeah. So outside in fires, without going too far down that path, and the similar thing here. So when you look at those row houses in Baltimore, there's similar to what was in D.C. or Philadelphia, anywhere, right? They're 18. Built in the 1800s, maybe earlier, later, but they're class three, ordinary construction. And when you talk about the back porches, they are built generally out of just plywood and 2x4s. While sometimes they are, built in a way to facilitate living, most of the time they are just storage. So it is literally a lumber attached to a building. So that's the general feel of rear porches. The other thing that's very common in those is everybody has them. And so when you start at one end of a building, it usually goes right on down to the next. It's similar in that picture there because they have wooden balconies. I want to say this about outside in fires. In a class that Sam Hiddle and I did on common fire ground errors, we talk a lot about mechanical decision making. Now we could have a whole nother topic on mechanical decision making in the fire service, and I think we created that unintentionally for good reasons. When we really started to focus on SOGs, but along the way, I think we've made it impractical for firefighters to be thinking firefighters. In other words, we've spelled the plan out for them, and we've in essence said, just do what we tell you to do, and there you go. And so that leads to mechanical decision making where people don't think for themselves, or certainly don't think like they can think for themselves. But mechanical decision-making would be that piece that says, no, we go right through the front door. That's what we do here. God bless you. I would say, I think that's what most people do. In all fairness, that is what we do most of the time for fires that the exclusion piece would be basement fires. But I want to say this about outside in fires, and Chief Halton alluded to this. The difference in the outside in fire is, that is a fire that by nature is going to spread via void spaces. That's how it's coming into the house. And so you have studded walls with drywall and all the fires behind it, which is not what we encounter when we come into a home and find room and contents fire. And the biggest misconception is that first hose line going through the front door is going to make quick resolution of that fire. And the reality is that's you are not going to apply enough water to the right places at the right time to outpace the fire growth in the void spaces. So I think when Chief Halton brought that up, that was a key point to reinforce. You are not going to put that fire out quicker than it can spread through the void spaces. So being able to take that first line to the bank and to the Charlie side and the technique, we had used the term, flanking the fire, is that we're applying water from a 45 degree angle on that rear side. We're not flowing a stream into the windows from the exterior. We're literally flanking, and it is a highly, highly successful technique. The benefit of flanking the fire is that you can then support that line with those interior lines and the interior operations to get the search and everything else done. Don't be fooled into thinking that by making that push into the front door, that you are going to extinguish that fire on the rear. Sometimes you will. Sometimes you'll get lucky and you do it. But know this, you won't outpace that fire in the void spaces. It will eventually wrap around and give you a big kiss.
So I guess, and I'm sorry, Brian, I know you were talking about residential and what you're building stock is. So just so everybody understands, so this is a fire at 4 o'clock in the morning, where our particular organization will put 30 people and two command officers on the scene in less than 6 minutes. So, you know, that's, they are able to do those tactics because of their staffing, their response times, where the firehouses are located. So, I mean, that tactic worked for them in their area. So, Brian, I just want to make sure, you know, I didn't want everybody to think that if you have 2- and 3-person engines and you got spaced across, you know, firehouses that are far apart, you know, is that tactic going to work for you? So, but.
Well, so I'll say this, you know, interestingly enough, so even if we have homes that are 24 to 3,200 square foot, two-story, you know, type 5 construction, right? So that occupancy right there looked like a pretty new construction type. I wasn't there obviously or anything like that, but that's a condominium complex. And to Chief Schultz's point, you know, you got to get to the most basic fundamental, which is we always teach, is get to the seat of the fire. The seat of the fire is where that thing started, which was on the back. And so the quicker we can get water applied to the seat of the fire, we can start to control the spread. You know, I go back to my neighbor who's a carpenter. He gave me a great life lesson a long time ago, 20 years ago when I moved in, was make every step count. And in the fire service, you know, a lot of times, to Chief Swole's point, we just get this automated thing, like we go through the front doors. And if you watch carpenters, you watch laborers, you watch people in the true trade business, they work, they walk and move with purpose. There is very few steps on a construction ground that are taken without purpose. Whether it's when they move across and they take stuff, they take all their tools because they're not going to come in 3 and 4 trips. They're very purposeful. And so it's always resonated with me. And on the fire ground, when you look at that and you make decisions, you have to make purposeful decisions, both at the firefighter and the company officer level. And so looking at that fire, you know, in my eyes, there's the solution is, yeah, let's get it lined to the back of the fire. You know, have the next in company, you know, if needed, get an additional line or go to the interior and start to suppress that fire on the interior, because you know you're going to have spread interiorly. So I completely agree with everything you guys are saying. I think we're all doing this sort of the same thing. It's just a matter of, to the points we've made, is, you know, looking at what your building stock is, looking at where you're going, and making the best decision off your experiences and your training, and taking the opportunities that you can when you go on these calls in these buildings to look and say, okay, what would we do if this, that, and the other, and play it out. That's the best training, better than any, you know, scheduled, skilled, or anything training you can pull off, is to actually do it on your real stock buildings.
So, I mean, like, so Brian, I mean, one of the things Chief Schultz taught me a long time ago was the, you know, I thought that everybody put fires out like I put fires out, and he told me that wasn't so. And he's taken me a lot of places that have proven that. So, I mean, you know, so I gave you that the staffing levels and timeframes. So, I mean, how many tasks in your organization, you know, what would you have to change? I mean, your department.
No, so like area. That, if we get that fire in our area, if I get that fire today in my town, you know, I'm going to assign the first two companies to get a 2.5-inch line to the back of the building, because I'm going to, in all truth and honesty, if I can't roll to the back of that with a truck, I know that's going to take a crew of four, you know, to move a 2.5 and get it in play and actually start flowing water in an effective manner, and still have eyes on the building, right? You know, I can't have two guys, a company officer, a firefighter with a nozzle and backing them up, and still truly have a set of eyes on that building. So I'm going to assign two companies to that. Then I'm going to assign the next two companies to make an interior. And, you know, that fire for us in our world is going to escalate to at least a second alarm, if not probably a third alarm assignment, just given the gravity of the nature of the tasks that need to be completed in a very timely manner. I'll get those resources coming quickly, but our trucks are coming, you know, our first alarm assignments on scene, total of 6 companies in a matter of about 12 to 15 minutes. So we don't have an issue with that. It's just our staffing levels. You know, we're staffed at three on a truck, we run combinations of ladders and engines and things. So, we do an arrival order type matrix.
Yeah. I think sometimes when, you know, and Bobby alluded to all these different training companies, or, when you go to FDIC and, you know, I want to go hear some guy with a New York accent, I want to go hear the guy with the Boston accent, you know, or whatever accent I want to go hear, is that, you know, they're talking about their experiences and their fires. And, you know, listening to Mike Ciampo talk, you know, Mike Ciampo's fires are, nobody has fires like that other than LA. I mean, fires like that, where they can descend so many units and so many people in such a quick time, other than, you know, the big metropolitan cities, you know, the LAs, the Chicago's and stuff like that, is that, you know, yeah, I'm going to pick up a piece or two from their class and, you know, maybe I'll be able to implement it in my organization, but, you know, broad stretches, it, you know, I can't show up with 50 firefighters in less than 4 minutes, and I can't do multiple things. Just like Brian's alluding, you know, he's got 12 to 15 minutes to get, you know, his effective fire force there, you know, and what he's got to pick and choose what he's going to do at that fire, the picture that we showed, you know, in a sequence that's going to match his arrival time. So, you know, just a matter is that I just think some people get so honed in on their geographic area or what this fire department's doing, what that fire department doing. They don't take into account all these different things that have to happen, or, you know, staffing, fire apparatus, Bobby, hose, nozzles, you know, people's abilities. And that's that part that, you know, at the beginning of the session that, you know, if we don't practice this, you know, with Brian's fire department, if we don't practice stretching a 2.5 to the rear, we don't do that till this fire happens, you know, that's going to be a failure. And I'm sure that's not the case in Brian's fire department. I'm just saying, you know, sometimes I don't think we practice enough what we need to do.
So one thing I'll say about training and related to that is I always tell people at FDIC, they'll see, you know, Mike Champo's truck company class, and I'll get guys from St. Louis region, right? So St. Louis, other than the city of St. Louis running trucks and engines, and guys are like, oh my gosh, I don't need to take that class. We don't have trucks. And I always say to them, I said, you're not going to come back to the Midwest or small town America or whatever, which is the majority of the American fire services, smaller departments, right? There's large departments and those are great, but a vast majority of the fire services, these smaller 3 to 5 to 10 station departments, whatever. But you can learn the tactics that Champo teaches for truck company operations and apply those tactics in your organization to make you a more effective operation of truck companies. Same as an engine class from Traditions Training, Engine House Training. That's the benefit of those classes. Not that they're going to teach you how to do it the FDNY way, the Baltimore City way, you know, or the Kirkwood way in my part, right? We're not going to teach you that. What we're going to tell you is, here are things to make you a better firefighter, company officer, chief officer, whatever it's going to teach you to make you more effective on your job, and how to stretch that line in a more efficient and effective way, how to get it in place faster. All those things are going to impact the fire ground and make it a safer fire ground for both the community and ourselves that are operating on there. So that's the benefit of it. So, I say that because I think a lot of people get the misconception that, well, I'm not FDNY. I come from a volunteer fire department, and, you know, they could step on a fire and put the thing out with 50 people. I'm going to be lucky to get 6. Why is that class good for me? Well, the reason it is, it's going to teach you how to do it. You know, it's going to teach you more efficient ways to do it.
Plus, you get to see the comedy show that is Mike Champo. So there is, so he always has great information and always works in great humor. Keeps you entertained for sure. So Chief Alden.
Well, Not to tell tales out of school. I don't want to play one-upmanship with Ricky about all the resources he can bring. But here at the Limestone Fire Protection District number 2, you want to talk about resources, baby? You want to talk about being able to assemble people? So that's where I volunteer. That's the folks I volunteer with. And they do an amazing job, just an amazing group of men and women. But to the point of this conversation today, you could be LA County, and you could be able to order 100 engines. You could be working for California Division of Fire. I need 100 engines, and you could do that. But if those 100 engines don't have the ability to stretch lines effectively and do what they need to do in a timely and efficient fashion, as Chief Schultz said earlier, it's just interesting. It's not very useful. It's just interesting. And so irrespective of where you do work, remember that your ability to stretch hose lines effectively is critical, whether you're Baltimore City, Limestone Fire Protection District number 2, Denver, you know, St. Louis, it doesn't matter where you are. DC, doesn't matter where you are, because that first new engine, getting that first line into play effectively can make all the difference in the world, right? And we had a couple of things that came into us from just folks that are watching. We had some pictures that Morty, thank you for those pictures. For our friend of ours, Morty Schultz from upstate New York, sent us a fire they had over the weekend where they had looks like a McMansion, right, Ricky? Well, looks like a McMansion type of home.
Big old house.
Stretching lines effectively in these gigantic homes is not an easy task either. If you're stretching a line into a house that's, you know, 4,000 square feet or 5,000 square feet, that's a big home. And that can be a daunting task, you know, especially if it's like a center deal where you've got a staircase in the middle and you've got, you know, rooms wrapped around that. You've got all kinds of issues with fire spread in that regard. And from Jim Scott, Jim added that, you know, you throw in some cellulose insulation in those walls and you've got a fire in the walls, You know, you're gonna have a fire that's gonna be creeping for a long time. And that's a lot of, you were just talking about Mike Ciampo. That's pulling a lot of drywall off a lot of walls to open those walls up. And you've got to know what you're doing. You've got to pay attention to it. And to Brian's point, you still have to do the truck company functions, even if you're taking those tools off an engine. Those functions have to happen. You've got to open up the building. You've got to force the doors. You've got to find the fire seat. You got to find the location. You got to remove people. And you know, engine companies are all. Oh, Nick Salamet. Boy, I wish we could just send you the link. Basic fundamentals is the foundation of training for all firefighters in all departments. What we do beyond the foundation is how we customize operations from department to department. And that's a quote from Nick Salome. And Nick, thank you so much. If you don't know who Nick is, there's an incredible gentleman in of his own right who teaches at FDIC and writes for us extensively and just an outstanding human being, but he's exactly right. In other words, take classes from everybody, because you can customize that to Bipperville or Bobbleville or Kipperville or Copperville, to quote Mike Mulligan and Marianne, the steam shovel story from your youth, if you had a youth. And that's important to remember, right? Customization. The secret strength of the American Fire Service is that we're local. We government governs best when it's closest to the people. And we are the closest to the people as a governmental agency or an extension of the government in practical functional terms, right? And we've got to meet the needs of that community with the resources of that community. And that's not good or bad or right or wrong. It's what it is. I chose to live where I chose to live. And I know that I've got some of the most capable, competent, well-trained firefighters in America. I'm not going to get 250 of them on a first alarm, but I'm going to get 10 or 12 of the best human beings on the face of the planet to fight a fire in my home. And I'm grateful for that. And if you're in a community where you only get two or three, you know that going into it, right? And so Nick is exactly right. You've got to customize your operations. You've got to customize your tools, your apparatus, even your training, right? You know, so I can't, great topic and wonderful stuff. And I'll throw it to Scott Kraut, who I apologize. I got my Scots right now.
I don't even know. There he is.
That's all good, Chief. I think you bring up a good point, and I think honestly, I think I'm literally theorizing right now, but I think the fact that there's 100 firefighters on the or 50 in the first 10 minutes is actually a hindrance, you know, because everybody's trying to do. I mean, let's all be honest. Everybody's trying to get through the front door, and to my point earlier, you know, one thing I've started doing is trying to slow down the incident. And I don't mean we don't move with a purpose and we're not aggressive. I just mean that, you know, sometimes there's too much going on. I mean, now the incident commander wants me to label the floors, right? And I could care less. And I've tried to convey this, that I'll tell you what I got, two in the front, three in the rear. But if you want to call it, you know, L1, 2, T1, I don't care, because I know where I'm operating, and I get it from the incident commander standpoint, but I don't want to label that. I've already got 16 things to do at 4 o'clock in the morning, to Ricky's point. I've got people trapped potentially. I've got to get water on the fire. I've got to take a lap, which takes time. I've got to dress appropriately so I don't die. And now you want me to label, you know? And so to that point, it's becoming more and more necessary for me to train my guys and girls to operate autonomously so that they can make good choices without my direction. I'm still going to give them direction, but I need them to take the first couple steps without my cue. And that's my job as a leader and a mentor, is to set that up on any given day, so that when game day happens, it just clicks in. And to Ricky's point early on with the multiple lines and thinking about second and third view companies, we started, you know, hose bundles are you know, I think it's pretty commonplace now. And especially if you're short staffed or trying to set up the fire ground for the other incoming companies. So obviously we're paying attention to where we position for the ladder truck. But the next thing is, to Ricky's point, is we've started reverse engineering our lines. So we're running the bundles from the door back to the fire truck. And then the chauffeur will make up the difference. And a lot of times what that means is running a 3-inch or, you know, into the courtyard, especially for a garden apartment, and putting a gated Y on it so that the second in company doesn't have to stretch 600 feet, you know, that they're set up for success. They can now bring their own bundles to the game, attach them to the Y, and go to work much more effectively. And that's, you know, obviously that's incumbent upon me to relay that message over the radio that we've got a line in the courtyard, bring your bundles, and let's go to work.
All right, Scott, I know we got a couple-minute break here before we got a hard stop here from Pete. So I think you finished your thought, and I hope we didn't cut you off. But so, Chief Schultz, everything good there in South County? Because, you know, my house is down there. I'm kind of worried, so. Tornado warning good?
I think he's locked up.
Yeah, I think he's locked up. There's a tornado warning down by his house, so. So, I'm a little worried, so, but. So, I mean, hey, I guess we got to kind of wrap it up. We ran a little long. I think it's because we had a good conversation, and obviously we had great people on here and given different perspectives on there. And I think that's one of the most important things that I, you know, and when I went to FDIC this year, I had a whole different mindset change about that, was that, you know, what I know is what I know, and it works for me and it works for my area. It probably won't work for Brian's area. But that doesn't make Brian's fire department any less good or any less as, what is it? I'm sorry,
Limestone Fire Protection
District. Limestone Fire Protection number two. You know, it doesn't make him any, you know, it doesn't make him any less of a fire department or less of firefighters. You know, you just, but, you know, get these pieces from everywhere. I mean, I learned something from Brian. I learned something from Bobby. I learned something from Scott. I learned something from Larry. And just make your fire department better. I mean, yeah, I love hearing Mike Champo's stories about, you know, FDNY tower ladder tactics. Do I get to do them every day or every 2 years? No, but man, the day I get to do it, it's going to be a great day because, you know, I'm going to be able to take a bunch of pictures and send them to Champ. And, you know, just I just can't talk enough about how we have to be inclusive of the whole fire department. You know, you just can't think in your geographic area. So I know we got to get off pizza, giving us the high sign here, Bobby. So, Brian, thanks for coming on with the fire service instructors. I'm not going to say the first part. And Bobby, as always, we appreciate you, Fire Engineering, and the Clarion Events Group, for allowing us to do what we do. And
yes, sir. One last thing, Ricky, if everybody just remember to keep those 13 incredible families that of the servicemen that were killed in Kabul last week in your thoughts and prayers. There's probably no more difficult time in the life of any family than to find out that their service member has fallen. So please keep those moms and dads and brothers and sisters of those brave men and women that we lost in your thoughts and prayers. And thank you for tuning into Fire Engineer.
All right, that's it. We're not going to say any more.